Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your host, Steve K9 Kim, from the city of Los Angeles, and joining me from the Bay Area, where he's left his heart, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, welcome aboard.
Hey, how you doing, Steve? It's almost like a throwback Monday, because I know we're going to talk about something from years ago, but it's fitting because this is the last week we'll lead into a Miguel Cotto fight until he's lured out of retirement, as all boxers are. Happy Monday.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call in, the number 347-215-7598, and yes, the president is lined up on Twitter. But if you want to follow him, you could do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Programming reminder, we're here for at least 90 minutes or less, but we also have bonus championship rounds, if needed, going up to 9 p.m. Eastern time. But let's get started with round number one. This past weekend, it was Leftovers at the theater at Madison Square Garden on HBO, and your new WBO light heavyweight champion of the world, Sergey Kovalev, stopped Slava Shabransky in two rounds, improving his record to 31-2-1, 27 knockouts as he regained some mojo. Then light heavyweight Sullivan Barrera, he's in line for a title shot in 2018. He subdues the awkward Felix Valera in 10. And super featherweight action, a little bit of controversy, Yuri Gamboa winning a 10-round decision over Jason Sosa. Gabe, just what can be gleaned or taken from Kovalev blowing out Shabransky, a guy that we know coming into this fight simply didn't catch well?
Well, we know that boxing can certainly survive Andre Ward retiring. It was almost like the sport kind of just shrugged and then moved on to the Kovalev fight. But in terms of the fight, you know, probably not much. I mean, I think for Kovalev, you know, he spoke – I was watching a Radio Raheem interview with him today, and he talked about just – certain things that he was kind of remembering to do, but also getting more in sync with his new team, understanding his conditioning, all those things. I think he felt better in the fight. I mean, it's only, you know, two rounds, but I think enough to say that you looked at his body, he looked a little more fit, probably wasn't super fat coming in, probably didn't smoke as much or drink, you know, as much between the loss and this fight. And you know, to me, he looked good. I thought he had snap on his punches. There was a nice punch variety. He wasn't just, you know, falling into certain patterns. And he was very patient in getting Shabransky out of there. He's got a good punch. And is known for fighting back when he's hurt and doing some damage. I thought it was an excellent performance. I don't know if it says that he could beat Andre Ward, but it certainly shows that he's not gun-shy. He didn't have the complete meltdown that fight has been turned into. And that he's ready to rock and roll in 2018.
I wanted to see a little bit more because you're right. In short bursts, a lot of guys can look good. It's over the long haul when you get a real accurate, true depiction or picture of where a fighter stands. But, Gabe, is that first right hand that kind of bounced off of Shabransky's shoulder and then onto his head and the way he reacted, I said, yeah, this is not going to last long. And there's a reason why they chose Shabransky. Good-looking record. He could punch a little bit. He gave the impression of having at least somewhat of an offensive threat. But if you can't catch well and you have low punch resistance, Sergey Kovalev can still look very, very formidable. But I thought it was adroit matchmaking in a sense that with all the uncertainty, both physically and psychologically, that Kovalev came in with, like I said, more baggage than LAX or JFK, you kind of needed this type of performance to build back the persona and the reputation. But, Gabe, I think it's real interesting, and I'm looking forward to this. According to Kathy Duva, the head of main events, March 3rd, back at the same venue and hopefully with more people this time around will be the return of Kovalev, and it could be against Sullivan Barrera. And there's also a very good chance that Dmitry Bivol, the WBA titleist, will also be on this bill. So, again, this was not the greatest night. This was not Yaki Lopez against Eddie Mustafa Muhammad or Matthew Saad Muhammad, but it is a kickoff to what I believe will be a very interesting era or run at 175.
There's so many dangerous fights for him. You know, Dmitry Bivol, Arthur Beterbiev, Sullivan Barrera even. I think, you know, he had a rough night, but he's really steady. He's durable, you know, and we know he can bleed and just come through and just be go into beast mode and get a guy out of there. I think, you know, there's nothing but good fights for Sergey Kovalev and for people that have that that are living in that or prefer that HBO universe. You know, I don't know what Adonis Stevenson's doing, and honestly, I don't care. But on HBO, there's going to be some great 175-pound fights.
Yeah, Adonis Stevenson seems to be operating under the PBC universe and really looking at it and looking at the ratings. I see possibly a Badu Jack in his future, which I believe is a good matchup. Marcus Brown wouldn't be bad. And, you know, Eleder Alvarez, who is the WBC mandatory in theory, who's also lined on that side of the street. Gabe, looking at Sullivan Barrera, you know, listen, Valera was very awkward and very cagey in there, was for the most part in there to survive the last two-thirds of that battle. If you had your druthers, would you see Sullivan Barrera take on the Crusher or Dmitry Bivol?
I think Bivol. I think, you know, I want to see Bivol get seasoned. I mean, maybe that's not fair to Barrera, but, you know, he could have had the fight. He didn't take it. And I think Kathy Duva said that there's still a chance that could happen, that Kovalev Barrera could be made. There is the option, despite the purse bid with Bivol. You know, but I don't know. I want to see Bivol go through the fire a little bit. And I think Sullivan Barrera is tightening his game a little bit. His punches weren't as wild. He had to be the more controlled boxer. You know, he didn't get Valera out of there, but he tamed him, you know, and was able to kind of weather the guy's storm and figure out maybe I shouldn't get in a million exchanges with this guy because that's really his chance. That's a guy I want to see again. I thought it was a really fun fight. It kind of droned off in some spots, but then it would pick back up, and it wasn't too ugly. You know, not like the fight we're about to talk about, but I think that I don't know. Who do you prefer?
Because Dmitry Bivol right now has passed the eye test, but not necessarily the resume test, and we do have to note, he did beat Valera pretty handily in his seventh pro fight, so that's certainly a feather in his cap. I want to see him fight Barrera. I think Barrera Bivol, the Killer Bees, will really give us an idea of just where does Bivol stand in the 175-pound class. Sullivan Barrera has one loss. That's to Andre Ward. Certainly no shame in that. And I've said this about Barrera. He's not spectacular, but he's solid and he's steady. And he's the type of fighter that he's not great at any one thing, but he's pretty good at a lot, and he's certainly very, very competent. And every division needs a couple of guys like him that are really roadblocks or measures of just where you stand in a particular division. And I believe Barrera, over the course of the last, let's say, 18 to 24 months, has earned a title shot. So I'm good with either fight. But again, if I had my druthers, I would go with Bivol against Barrera. Gabe, what did you find more objectionable about the Gamboa-Sosa fight? The actual decision or the narratives that were being pushed by the HBO broadcast about the victimization of this poor Cuban star, Yuri Gorgas Gamboa?
Yeah, and just talking about, like, I think you referenced the vaunted skills of him, that they would wax poetic about it in future dates, you know. It's like he's gotten better in reflection. But, you know, when things weren't his way, he didn't. I'm kind of over. I've always been over Yuri Gamboa. There's no victimization here. He made a decision. He could have had that Rios fight. He's probably kicking himself watching Rios fight Kell against the Brill, a fight that many people didn't think Rios won. You know, he didn't dare to be great. He got over here respect to people that were able to get out of that situation and the sacrifice that they make. But okay, now we get to criticize your boxing career. I'm just not that impressed. I never have been. But you know, Max is very excited. And they don't mention.
I thought
we're gonna get into something later, and I'll just put a footnote. As much as Jim Lampley and Max Kellerman have pushed the Margaritos hand wraps narrative and pushed really things that didn't happen in Max Kellerman's case, did you hear about Biogenesis at all the other night?
No, and just, we got to bring that up. He suddenly lost a foot off the fastball. You know, just magically,
mm-hmm.
those home runs that were going 50 feet past the bleachers are now routine fly balls or landing at the warning track.
Yeah.
What a coincidence. Also, in terms of the business being tough on Euriorkis Gamboa, now maybe this has a lot to do with his association with Golden Boy Promotions, and we have to be fair, he was a late replacement for Robinson Castellanos, but two fights ago, Gamboa was knocked out by Castellanos. And then after one tune-up fight in Mexico, where I understand he didn't look all that great, he lands right back on HBO. That doesn't seem like a business conspiring against anybody at that point. I'd like to think, based on his actual achievement, he's been treated pretty damn well. Moving on, from the big room, Madison Square Garden, it is the finale on HBO. Miguel Cotto calls it a career, taking on Saddam Ali, and also the semi-main that night, Ray Vargas defends his WBC 122-pound title against Oscar Negrete. Gabe, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked of Mario Lopez earlier on my other podcast.
Wow.
When you think of Miguel Cotto, what will be the first couple of things that come to your mind about his career?
Great left hook, particularly to the body. But I think it was a well-crafted career. You know, he only, I believe, took it a belt from a guy that had the belt like once. I think that was what Sergio Martinez rather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything else was for a vacant belt. Never unified. It was a well-crafted career, very careful and measured, similar to the way that Miguel Cotto fights. I think he's a game fighter. You know, Margarito Cotto won is in there. I think the top five of the best fights I've ever been to, best events I've ever witnessed, and maybe even top two there, because
wow.
of just the way the crowd stood. And
interesting.
I've never seen a crowd stay there for so long after a war.
Agreed.
And just like all excited. It was unbelievable fight. And so, you know, but at the same time, a bit of a prima donna. But, you know, yeah, that's probably longer than a few sentences, but that's my initial thoughts on him. You know, great career, not completely that excited about it. I watched some of his fights again this week, had a good time. What do you think of him?
Cotto, to me, why he is in the Puerto Rican Mount Rushmore alongside Carlos Ortiz and Felix Trinidad and Wilfredo Gomez is the consistency of his career. I mean, he's 16 years in. And he's still a pretty damn good fighter. And yes, was it well-crafted and engineered and match-made initially by Top Rank and then by Top Rank again and then guided by Golden Boy? Yeah, but a lot of careers need to have some sort of roadmap and a game plan that needs to be adhered to. His record right now is 41-5. But unlike his other Puerto Rican colleagues who were shooting stars, like a Wilfredo Benitez, who basically won a title at age 17 and had an unbelievable potential and ceiling, he was washed up by 25. And Edwin Rosario didn't have a great long run. And Hector Camacho, post-Edwin Rosario, was fumigating arenas all across the land. Miguel Cotto won titles at 140, 147, 154, and eventually at 160, becoming the only Puerto Rican champion to win title belts in four weight classes. And again, I go back to your point. I do not argue. Some of that stuff was very, very much guided to. It was processed. But eventually, when you look at a resume that has Sergio Martinez, Shane Mosley, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, Antonio Margarito, and a still dangerous Zab Judah, among others, and an all-time memorable Boxing After Dark war against Ricardo Torres, and the fact that he was the driving force behind the revival of New York City as a boxing market at the Madison Square Garden, it's a Hall of Fame career. And again, was he a beloved character? No, but I compare him to Larry Holmes in a sense that Felix Trinidad, who was universally beloved and revered by the island, and just about everybody, was Muhammad Ali. This guy was the Puerto Rican Larry Holmes. And the one thing that I always thought about Miguel, even in defeat, there was a certain dignity to him. And I think for the most part, he's always kept that. And overall, listen, was he a reporter's delight? Was he funny? Was he engaging? No. But you know what? It's going to be a long time before we see that type of fighter again that can carry an island and a region quite like Miguel Cotto, Gabe.
And, you know, if you asked him right, whatever you asked him, he was honest with you. Even if he was telling you that he wasn't going to speculate about how the fight was going to go or if this was his next opponent, which he hadn't fought yet, was the toughest opponent of his career. But you could get into decent conversations with him about, you know, the mechanics of fighting or what he may be thinking in a past fight. I liked him as an interview just because he was a challenge, but not like in a Frankie Gomez kind of way. You could actually uncrack some good answers.
Wow, so, yeah. I don't know if challenge is quite the word that I would use in terms of trying to have a conversation with the long-lost Frankie Gomez. And, Gabe, I think Ray Vargas is simply too tall, too skilled, and too big for Oscar Negrete. But what I want to get into, and this was something that was burning up the Twitter timelines yesterday, what did you think of the Miguel Cotto retrospective on HBO?
It was all right. I got a little bored. Eventually I just kind of went back to watching Miguel Cotto fights. You know, I watched the Torres fight, Mosley, Margarito won. I didn't get to Mayweather, but I'll probably watch that this week just because. And that's just something, you know, you look at his career and the scores aren't close enough. But what you're asking me, you know, when they get to the Margarito fight, Max Kellerman says, you know, it turns out the way he even talks about the fight, like it was such a surprise out of nowhere in the sixth round, Margarito's punches started to really land. And it's like, you know, as if he hadn't done anything for the first half of the fight. Maybe that he was only staring at Miguel Cotto, who was executing a good game plan, but moving way too much, back into the ropes, getting hit with uppercuts very early on. And then he says that Margarito, we later learn, had dipped his wraps in some sort of substance.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pure bullshit. And just who was covering editorially for such that documentary? That's just not right. That's
yeah.
not what happened. I was at that hearing, and I have, you know, audio of that hearing. I was somewhere in my notes. I keep boxes of this stuff, all my notebooks and stuff. To my knowledge, no one accused him. None of the inspectors, none of the lawyers, nobody there accused him of dipping anything into anything. It was described as smeared. Some people thought there was more than others. Of this unknown substance that was on there. It could have been lotion, could have not been. I mean, it was very speculative. It was never defined. And then, you know, at the hearing, Margarito, let's just be clear, he was, and I asked the commissioner as he was walking out, to be clear, I was covering it for Max Boxing, what was he suspended for? Was it, you know, are you suspending him for what was on the wraps? Even though you have sent it off to the DOJ, one of the wraps, not both, one of them was at the hearing, you know, and the results hadn't come back. They wouldn't come back, I think, until March. And he said, no, we're suspending him because his wraps were wet and they had a foreign substance on it. That was it. Now, some people, it wasn't even that wet or it was damp. Tapatio was apparently sweating profusely with Nazim Richardson looking over him. This thing was also handled by like 18 people. My article on Max Boxing isn't up anymore. In that I document it, in the testimony, it's passed to Mosley's lawyer, who takes control of the wraps and then leaves the room, I think, and the inspector's with him. But then it passes through in this little makeshift box, like 18 people, before it finally, you know, gets sent off to the DOJ. So even right there, things were bad. But this narrative that Max Kellerman's pushing and that Jim Lampley's pushing, which sets up the narrative that the rematch was revenge for those raps and not a shitty game plan, or even just that Margarita was bigger, is just wrong, Steve. It's really, an injustice to Margarita. There's no evidence that he did anything in the Cotto fight. There are professionals, inspectors watching him. But let me ask you this. You know, you've seen a million, you've had your hand wraps. I'm sure you get it done often, or you have. There's no tape allowed on your knuckles. So even if you're putting the knuckle pad down and you're putting this insert in that's supposed to get hard like plaster of Paris, so that's the way this device works. Maybe it spreads a little bit to the gauze on top. Wouldn't that hurt your hands? Wouldn't there be evidence of that on your knuckles?
See, this is the thing that people, again, they have poor comprehension on Twitter. I wrote a post saying Max Kellerman said that his wraps were dipped in something. No, they weren't. That simply is not true. Now, if you said, Steve, but were those wraps legal by the letter of the law? No, they were used gauze, and you're not allowed to do that. In fact, I believe now the commission, I think we spoke about this years ago, basically says you got to make these wrappings oven fresh. Like, they better be from new material. You can't reuse gauze or tape or old hand pads. So we have to be clear about this. What Margarito did or what was done to him or for him was illegal. I will not argue that. And when people say, he's probably had that done for other fights, you know what? I wouldn't even argue that either. You're probably right. But when you start saying that he was dipping them in concrete and then putting them in the oven, in the incinerator, and then wrapping them up in more cement, it's a narrative. It's a complete narrative. It's not true.
And I don't think most people even understand the mechanics of what happened. Of what, like, you know, we've seen the wraps happen on TV a lot, right? The guy's hands, you know, the gauze is around the knuckles, and then they put the big pillow, the knuckle pad, over his knuckles. Well, inside that was maybe 5 or 6 times folded business card, like across the knuckle size strip of gauze that looked almost like you'd ironed it. And it had been used probably, you know, an insert, almost probably like a guide for everything else. You put it inside the knuckle pad and then you begin to tape everything down. That's what it was. And that's the thing that had stuff on it, not the knuckle pad, the knuckle pad, but not the big pillow. So I've always been trying to figure out what the hell this thing was supposed to do. It was supposed to get hard like a brick. I felt the other one, and it felt like a business card.
Gabe, I remember talking to you and David Avila, who were among the other media members that were there. I remember the prevailing opinion. It's just an opinion. We're not trying to retry this case, or we're not trying to exonerate Margarita or Javier Capatillo. But the general consensus is we're talking about old gauze.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, it was like, what's the big deal here? This is not the legendary Jack Dempsey story when he fought Jim Jeffries. It's an easy way of trying to paint Miguel Cotto in a certain way. Now, the Miguel Cotto retrospective was your classic, high-quality, slick production by HBO. But there are certain things that really they laid on thick. And I guarantee you there are people in Puerto Rico watching this going – Okay.
You don't mention the catch weights, not you, but HBO. He won the middleweight title by making the middleweight champ go to a catch weight because, and credit to him, this is how the business works. He maintained himself as a draw. You know, he was built into one, and he still was like this kind of awesome free agent out there kind of going, I can do a few hundred thousand pay-per-views with the right guy. I don't think it actually worked out that way with Martinez, or maybe Martinez was the wrong guy. But, that stuff matters, I think, ultimately. Maybe it'll be forgotten. He's the first Hall of Famer, no question, though.
Speaking of the HBO broadcast crew, it's amazing how they want to clean up boxing now, and everything has to be fought to the letter of the law of the Queensberry rules. How convenient, huh?
It's weird, though. You know, if Max is watching a Hopkins fight, it's just good old, dirty tricks from a veteran, or a veteran from a master.
He's got a lot of guile. What a moxie.
Andre Ward is gritty. Yeah. But, okay. You see the narratives that get pushed. And even you know, they're calling Dmitry Bivol a hot young thing, which I don't know if it made anybody else uncomfortable, but I was a little uncomfortable. Roy Moore was totally fine. But I think that...
wow! You want a little fee in there, Gamontoya.
I think Miguel Cotto, I think it's perfect, Steve. He is the Larry Holmes of Puerto Rico. It just makes total sense. A very solid career. And you're right, to survive even going through multiple promoters, his big dip was you know, losing to Margarito, but then he gets a couple wins, loses to Pacquiao in a catchweight fight. But then, you know, the big dip is losing to Floyd and Austin Trout, and you think, well, maybe it's over. And then he has a nice back end to his career. You know, I definitely think he's first ballot. I don't think it goes any other later than that. Do you?
No. If I had a vote, which I don't, because I'm not part of the BWAA, he would get the check mark next to his name. Let's go to the Twitter timeline. Of course, we begin with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. With the nail seemingly tied up at ESPN, would there be any way for him to get in on the action with Kovalev, Bivol, and Sully B? Also, is Beterbiev free to appear on HBO, or is he basically tied to Arum and Top Rank? Let me start off with this, Gabe. In terms of his relationship to Arum and Top Rank, I believe he's trying to extricate himself, if I'm not mistaken, from Yvonne Michel / Al Haymon. So I don't know what his status is as of this moment, but Bob Arum and Top Rank don't win that purse bid and pay him $300,000 as a one-off in Fresno. Let's put two and two together. Also, looking at the macro of this subject, see, this is what I find problematic. I think it's great that Showtime, HBO, and ESPN all want to really invest in boxing. Problem is, now you've got three entities that kind of act as their own universes. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you're in one universe, you're not able to take a rocket ship to the other one for the most part. Like, look at Danny Jacobs. He had to make a choice that, hey, I can't be at PBC and fight HBO guys all the time unless I go to Matchroom Sports and HBO.
Well, it'd be interesting, you know, with Dana White getting involved, and I think it's Zach Arnold's been talking about who's going to buy the UFC and UFC boxing. You know, is it going to be Jeff Bezos, guys like that? I wonder if somebody like a Bezos gets involved in boxing, if he looks around and tries to find a way to Walmart it or to Amazon it, in his case, and get everything under one roof. And, you know, it kind of just off topic here, but a little bit related. I've seen a lot of people, Margaret Goodman, Lou DiBella, talking about the National Commission and pointing to, you know, what's happened with Daniel Franco and also that case recently where the you know, there was blood results faked in a commission. What do you think about that idea? Is that in the same place as One Champion and all that?
You know, the issue is, what if you get the wrong guy? What if we get a national version of Bob Bennett?
There's another
issue that I was told long ago, these two words, states' rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, in theory, does it sound good? Yes. But there's a lot of football fans that believe having Roger Goodell as the commissioner is terrible for the NFL. So I don't know. Yeah. If you're going to have a national commission, you better get the right guy in charge.
Yeah. I think even if it's just some sort of collective bargaining agreement between the promoters to work together, but even that, I mean, it's a lot. I think something a little more organized needs to happen so we don't have these separate universes and careers like Adonis Stevenson was just kind of off to the side and irrelevant. But I think champions, the worst, somebody said to me a long time ago, the worst thing that can happen in boxing is champions not fighting and champions not fighting each other. I tend to agree.
Here's a tweet from Big Drama Show. Let's face it, after the Kovalev fight and the Gennady Golovkin fight, there's a certain stench about Las Vegas, right? I would say, yeah. What about you, Gabe?
I would agree. I mean, I you know, haven't been out there in a long time, but the atmosphere, maybe it's because we have too many choices, or maybe, you know, the UFC has diluted that big fight market. Or maybe we're just been on cable for so long that it's hard to have that crossover guy that, of course, you need to go to Vegas to see it. Maybe Vegas, I don't know if Vegas has the same cachet. Have you seen a big change over the years?
I think more than ever that if you go to Las Vegas, there's two type of shows that fit. It's either the small ballroom show that fits in at like a Cosmopolitan, right? Or the major pay-per-view show that belongs to T-Mobile or the MGM Grand Arena. But everything else in between, you're better off going to the Staples Center or the Barclays Center or Madison Square Garden or the Forum. There is no mid-level shows there anymore that'll be successful. And I actually think it's a welcome trend of bringing fights to where people can go and you just don't farm it out to a casino. I believe that over time has eroded the fan base or the ability to actually expand the fan base of this sport. Here's a question from Peter Escott. Will never happen, but how good would a tourney look at light heavyweight given recent results with the World Boxing Super Series tourney? Gabe, would it be safe to say that if we were the commissioner, let's say you were Commissioner Montoya, and you had the ability to say, okay, I'm going to make a tournament in one division, would light heavyweight be your number one choice?
No.
It wouldn't. Which one would it be?
I like middleweight, so I'd probably look at the middleweight division first. But you know what? I mean, there's some pretty damn good fights at 175, but also 147, you can make some great fights. 154, not as much. I would say somewhere, I would go middleweight just to make a decision. But yeah, you've got a plethora of good divisions right now.
Mm-hmm. And here's one from Galab Keen. Besides Adonis Stevenson being a joke, are there any serious roadblocks in making some of the great matchups at 175? In the future? Gabe, well, as far as I'm concerned, anyone that's under the HBO umbrella and then associated with main events, I don't see why not. Those particular fights with Bivol, Kovalev, and Sullivan Barrera, I think those fights make themselves.
That, and I don't think there's a, you know, I guess the Crusher would be the biggest cash cow or, you know, draw in that division. I mean, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't consider Adonis Stevenson that. I don't know. He does decent numbers. But there's nobody just saying flat out, I'm the A-side. Adonis Stevenson may be saying that, but what he really means is I'm without Heyman. So I'm just going to be over here. Yeah, I mean, all those guys kind of need each other in a sense. It's probably the most dangerous division in terms of punchers, would you say, is light heavyweight? Because all those guys can bang.
Yes, and speaking of which, Easy Ed tweets, instinct call, if it happens next year, Kovalev versus Bivol, who you got? Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one, Gabe.
Yeah, because that could end up looking like, you know, like Trinidad Vargas, you know, where a guy, he's good, but experience actually does count at this level.
Yeah,
and, you know, I'd probably lean with Crusher on it. He looked good to me the other night. But Bivol's real scary. I mean, that's just a toss-up.
Yeah, but keep this in mind about Bivol. He's 26 years old. He had a deep amateur career. And, but you're right. Professional experience is a little bit different. I mean, Kovalev, listen, if he beats Andre Ward, if he gets that decision last November, there's a whole different story and narrative being written about him. So we can't go – like I said Sergey Kovalev, to a certain degree, has become Mark Twain. The rumors of his demise are greatly exaggerated. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and keep sending in your tweets, at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe?
All right. 530, you're live on the next round.
Good evening, Steve. Gabe, it's Ringside Robert here.
Robbie, welcome aboard.
Good evening.
We had this discussion yesterday on my show, Steve, about who we thought the best light heavyweight currently is fighting because the division is stacked. And the consensus was, for most people that participated in that yesterday, said it was still Crusher because Crusher at least is still active and he's willing to fight anybody. We had somebody call up and try to defend Adonis Stevenson, which I thought was a complete joke. You can't defend somebody because they hold the lineal title, but yet they refuse to fight important fights. I think a tournament at 175 would be fantastic because there's a lot of unanswered questions with some of these people. And another guy that I mentioned yesterday that could play a factor, provided he comes back healthy, because he shows he's got the power, Joe Smith. I mean, we can't forget about him. I mean,
that's true.
Look at what he did to Andrew Fonfora. I'm not going to count what he did to Hopkins. That was to be expected. Yes, he got pretty beat up in his last fight, but he was able to knock the person down in the first round and fought the remainder of the fight with a broken jaw. So, you know, light heavyweight is very interesting, provided people can match people up properly and boxing politics doesn't get in the way.
But you know what? This being boxing, politics will get in the way, Robbie. Trust me.
Absolutely,
yeah.
It does. You know, absolutely it does. I mean, frankly, Steve, I would like to forget about Adonis Stevenson because, I mean, he only fights once a year for the past, what, 2 or 3 years? I mean, you can't take a guy like that seriously. And I know Ring talked about stripping him of his lineal status. I wish they would. I mean, you can't be held up in Montreal and expect people to come to you. You're not that much of a superstar.
Robbie,
I wish he'd get out of his damn shadow and fight somebody real.
In 2016, in this past year, Adonis Stevenson has fought one time each. Fought
yeah.
Thomas Williams and then Andres Fonfara in a rematch that wasn't exactly demanded. And I don't know what's going on there, but I've said this and I'll say it again. Adonis Stevenson is another example of why recognizing the lineal title as the only one or the one is simply unrealistic and also very dangerous. You could have guys holding this stuff hostage for years. I just give me the four-belt system as flawed as it is over that.
Absolutely. And look, I love the idea of a national commission or a commissioner running boxing, but I also see several problems with that. You would really have to get somebody in the hot seat who really knew about the sport and cared about the sport to run it properly. And I don't think there are people around today with as mixed up as boxing is. I don't know if there's anybody qualified to bring everything under one umbrella. I think we're stuck with the system we're stuck with until further notice.
And you're right. If you're going to have a national commissioner, pray to God or Allah or Buddha that it's more of a Mark Ratner than a Bob Bennett.
Amen.
Thank you very much. Robbie, as always, thank you for the call.
You're welcome, guys.
347-215-7598. Yes, Gabe.
I think the UFC was so smart to hire him and
yes.
have a guy with that kind of experience, you know, just right there, you know, is it like an encyclopedia? And probably all those connections. I wonder who would you put in charge of that kind of thing?
I haven't thought about it enough.
Dean Loas?
Wow, there's
maybe
a blast from the past.
Yeah. I mean, that's
I don't know.
A guy that, you know, speaking of Rapgate, yeah. Well, let's hit the phone lines again. 281, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Nate.
Nate, what's going on?
Hey, Nate.
Oh, man, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well. What can
we
do for you?
Well, I was at my son's soccer tournament out of town and this weekend, and we got back to the hotel. You know, I was hoping to get back there in time to see Kovalev, right? We got back there about two-thirds of the way through the Sullivan-Barrera fight. So apparently that was pretty good timing. And, you know, everything I've heard from the whole Gamboa thing and all of the HBO commentary, I'm like, oh, man, I'm kind of glad I missed that.
Lucky you.
Just at the right time, I think. So, just even reading about it, I just shake my head about, you know, Max and crew, and I always think, I mean, I know
Nate,
Lampley kind of goes along with
Nate,
that.
I want to make this clear. This is noticeable to the public. When I was watching that fight on Saturday, and I was watching it live, and I'm on Twitter kind of live tweeting this and that, people were bringing it up to me. This is not something that me and Gabe just dredge up here 2 days later. This is actually something that is noticeable and brought up as it's happening. Just want to make that clear.
Well, that's too funny.
Yeah.
Anyways, Kovalev, I mean, I was glad to see him come and did what he did, because I'm kind of in the same camp as you, where it's like, well, he said it wasn't really a comeback thing. I mean, he got screwed in the first fight by the judges, and you know, the second one, kind of deck was stacked, and I don't know if he would have ended up losing it or not, but you know, stopping it just because he got hit in the nuts really wasn't exactly.
I kind of wonder if the way they talk about Kovalev, you know, I mean, how much partying was he doing? Do people like, does the HBO crew know, like, what did he, you know, was he like dude in the Great White Hype and just bottle in one hand and just totally fat and, you know, kind of half stepping in the gym? Because it's like this false narrative of his losses to Ward. They weren't blowouts. They were tight fights.
Yeah.
The first one, many people believe that he won. I don't really understand it.
Yeah, and you know, I just have the same frustration or feeling with that. But you know, I don't get the impression that he's that kind of like partier kind of guy. I mean, the guy, look at him with that was his son, right? Afterwards, his son's like two or three now. And just, you know, he looks, just kind of has that look of more of a family guy than the go out and party kind of guy.
Well, I mean, again, but he could do his drinking from the safety of his own home. I mean, you know, let's not draw conclusions from random pictures on social media. I just, again, where there's smoke, there is fire. And this is the second, I would say, well-known trainer that hasn't had a lot of good Yelp reviews after working with Kovalev. We have to be fair about this.
Kovalev's case, you know, I mean, hard to work with is one thing, but you know, the drinking and that kind of stuff is another, right?
Well, so. I want to know if he only smokes when he drinks, you know, if he's one of those guys. Or, you know, I used to be a smoker, so if I say, you know, yeah, I've been drinking, you know, a little bit now and again, having a few cigarettes, it's probably more than both of those things, you know?
Well,
so,
I mean, either way,
you know,
right? It's different for you and me to go drinking and smoking or whatever versus, you know, a professional top-end athlete, right? I mean, that stuff, it just doesn't mix, period. And if he was doing it, then it's not going to be too long before it shows up and down the tubes he goes.
Well, we're going to see. We're going to see if this is really a rebirth or a renaissance, if he's a changed man. As they say, the proof is in the pudding. It'll be an interesting next year or so for Kovalev.
Yeah. So, different question for you. I just saw that Linares signed to fight who?
Deciding to fight Mercito Hesta on January 27th as part of a doubleheader on HBO, which will also feature Lucas Martin Matisse against a very tough Thai fighter. I'm just going to say one thing. I don't think it's a great matchup, but Mercito Hesta has to realize one thing. If you don't go out on your shield and you put out your typical listless, passionless performance, I believe that Golden Boy and HBO are going to say, as they say in Hard Knocks, Coach wants to see you bring your playbook. This is his shot.
Yeah, I think it's a good matchup for him. He's got athleticism, he's got speed, he can hit a little bit. Hesta is a guy that just has never quite broken through, never had that defining moment. What better opponent, I think? I mean, it's going to be tough, but Linares' legs can't really glide for all 12. I think he's got to fight in spurts sometimes, and he fades a little bit. It's up to Hesta, though, to put the pressure on him. have a high pace, get to that body early, establish yourself early. Because, yeah, you're right. If he's staring at him and happy to just kind of nip at
yeah, get him out of here.
And you have a nip and tuck kind of fight, no, that's not anything.
Yeah,
that's
so what I would say, and I would put in a special, I would call the Apollo Theater clause, that in the seventh or eighth round, if that's the fight that's happening in front of us, Sandman Sims should be willing to, or be able to come out to the center of the ring with that music and give Hester the Hulk and say, GTFO. As I date myself again with that reference.
I'm going to put make Steve the commissioner. That's blocking.
Yeah. Commissioner Kim with the K. Boy, what a scary thought that would be. Wow. Anyway, Nate, we got to get running, okay?
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening.
Absolutely. 347-215-7598. We're here for at least another 45 minutes here on the next round. Gabe?
Rule number two, no sham promoters.
805. Yeah, exactly.
You're live on the next round. 805. Hello?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hello.
It's me, Nacho.
Nacho,
hey,
welcome
Nacho.
Aboard.
Hey, thanks. As far as the fights this weekend, I agree with you guys as far as the Gamboa fight. I mean, I give him some credit for taking the fight on short notice, but he looked about as spent of a bullet as you can get at this point. He's just pretty much a name, and I think Golden Boy should recognize that and probably, you know, most likely I heard they're going to match him up with the kid that just beat Corrales, Machado, next. Have you heard anything
okay.
about that?
You know what? I'm all for it. Machado can punch. It'd be a good name scout to have, and it would most
mm-hmm.
likely end in a KO. Sign me up.
Yeah, I'm good with it too. with the Barrera fight, I thought he did well considering that Valera has one of the most awkward styles I've seen in a long time. But
yeah.
I was kind of hoping he would have put a little bit more into his shots. It seemed like he was a little too tentative at times because of Valera's style. But, you know, he got the job done and he won, and now he moves on. And in the main event, I think it's like you said, Steve, it's a really good matchmaking. Chabransky is a solid, like, B-minus fighter. And I think they knew that Kovalev was still – on his A game when he wants to be focused and zeroed in. And once he started teeing off on him, it was pretty much good night because Chabransky had no answer. So it's a good rehab win for Kovalev, but I definitely want to see somebody in there and like a Bivol or Barrera, somebody that will take his shot and then answer back. So then that way we really get a true sense of how much Kovalev has left. As far as this, you guys were talking about that Cotto thing. I watched that. I totally agree with you guys because that was one of the things that pissed me off watching it was that Kellerman and Lampley were both trying to paint Margarito as like Louis Resto. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Absolutely no legitimate proof that he was wearing those wraps in that first fight. And
yeah.
Secondly, for them to try and turn around and say that that the second fight was like a vindication of Cotto's career, no, it really wasn't because by that point they forgot Pacquiao had beaten the shit out of Margarito the year prior. So Margarito was pretty much a shell of himself by the time they fought that second fight. So for him to try to paint it as like it was sweet revenge for Cotto, I thought was a bit over the top, to be honest. But
right.
I agree with you guys.
They also, they didn't, sorry to interrupt you, they didn't, you know, all of a sudden the narrative is like, you know, Margarito loses his wraps, and then all of a sudden he's just defanged, and he, you know, he looks like shit in the fight. But there's no accounting for, like you said, his damaged eye in the rematch, but also the damage that he took in the first Cotto fight. Steve has covered him up close. Doug has covered him up close for years, and both have said that he was never—they'd never seen him that beat up before. So, this narrative that they were pushing is exactly that, and it's a false.
Yeah, exactly. I just felt like it was completely unjustified for them to try to change history when there's no reason for it to be changed. Margarito was never caught with anything in that fight. And also, too, I've argued this with other people who have always tainted Margarito, saying that he always used the wrap. My whole thing is he basically fought most of his career here in California and in Nevada. I find it hard to believe that either commission would have never caught this way before the Mosley fight. And that's pretty unbelievable to me that neither the inspectors in California or in Vegas were ever able to catch him wearing illegal hand wraps. I find that really hard to believe. So,
Capatillo at the hearing talked about that they used the knuckle pad over and over again. They did this in the gym. And so he got them confused, grabbed, because he had this guy all over him. He's retaping his hands. Nazim was late to the wrapping, so they wrapped, I believe, the right hand, and then they had to rewrap, and they found this old knuckle pad in there. So, I mean, there's no disputing that there is this thing in there. But at the hearing, Capatillo said, it was all me, it was my fault. And people take that admission, that it was all me, my fault, and then they conflate it with the idea that he was putting plaster of Paris on his hand and trying to make a cast. He was saying, I made the mistake and put the wrong knuckle pad, the used one, on his hand instead of making a new one. That's the whole admission part of it. People really, they conflate a lot of things, make a lot of logic leaps, but you're absolutely correct to point out, there is no evidence to suggest that happened in the Cotto fight. You know, and pointing to his face, I'm sorry, but he looked pretty beat up in the Manny fight. And I don't think it wasn't his next fight, so the idea that his face was damaged for all time doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Nacho, we got to get running. Thank you for the call.
All right, thanks.
347-215-7598. Top of the hour, we'll go to the fight preview, and we have news and notes. Gabe?
Oh, man, don't get me started on Rapgate. 774.
Too late.
Yeah, too late. 774, you're live on the next round.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good. What's going on?
Hello.
Very good. Very good. I had a I watched the fight on Saturday night with Kovalev. Needless to say, I was expecting Kovalev to perform the way he did, and I think he's a terrific fighter. I think that mentally, he needed that fight, and I expect him to fight either Barrera or Bivol next. I would like to see him fight Barrera. I think right now, that's probably the more competitive matchup, considering that Barrera has more experience, as you mentioned. I think if he fights Bivol this year, early this year, I think Kovalev knocks out Bivol. But if Bivol is given a few fights to kind of get ready for Kovalev, I would actually favor Bivol over Kovalev, just considering the conditioning. I think Bivol might be a better conditioned fighter just from looking at some of his previous fights. But, that's kind of hard to tell. But I would favor Bivol with a little more experience under his belt. But if they were to fight right away, I think Kovalev would probably beat Bivol right now. And I consider Kovalev to be, still, in my opinion, I consider him to be a top 4 pound for pound.
Wow, that high. Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, I haven't seen anybody. To me, I thought he beat Andre Ward. I honestly felt he won the first fight. And to say he actually beat the number one fighter pound for pound, I think he still needs to be considered as someone who deserves that recognition. I don't think anybody's won or has been as competitive against Andre Ward as Sergey Kovalev. So, I think when you consider everything, I mean, when you're that competitive with Andre Ward, I mean, who has been competitive with Ward in the past, several years when he's fought? I think the only guy that was somewhat competitive was maybe Carl Froch, and I think Andre Ward dominated him. So,
yeah, Froch legitimately won maybe three, perhaps four, and I thought Kovalev won 7 or 8 rounds against Ward the first fight. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And dropped him.
You're right about that. So.
Right. I mean, and then obviously I think the second fight, I mean, if you're – if you're someone who respects boxing, respects the rules of boxing, and, you know, I kind of feel bad for some of these, you know, foreign fighters who try to make it big in the United States, but then they're at a disadvantage as the away fighter. I mean, essentially, you know, I think Kovalev kind of got the bad end of the stick when he's fighting, you know, the American gold medalist in Las Vegas, you know, where, you know, I think Tony Weeks, I mean, I like Tony Weeks, he's a good ref, but I personally feel he did a terrible job refereeing that fight. And, you know, and I think that the first fight with Ward, I think Ward was favored with the decision when I don't think, you know, he really deserved it. I think Kovalev deserved to keep his titles, you know. And so that being said, I think Kovalev should still be, you know, heavily regarded. I don't think he has that much left, in my opinion. I think this is probably his last year where he is at his best, and I think that he should take advantage and try to get as many fights as he can.
Well, I like the fact that the plan is to bring him back March 3rd. I think that will be beneficial to him. Anyway, thank you for the call. We really appreciate it. Call in next week, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
You know, it's amazing. He's you know, loses Andre Ward, fights again, has a date set up. When's Danny Garcia's next fight? Just wondering. Asking for a friend. 313, you're live on the next round. 313?
Hey, what's going on? Hey,
Jim? What's up?
Yes, what's going on?
Okay, yeah, man. Yeah, to bounce on the previous caller, yeah, I mean, Kovalev could still be ranked very highly, but, you know, at the end of the day, I could still go back to Kotelnik versus Alexander on the Eastern Europeans not getting sued.
Ooh, I remember that. Yeah. Good
call.
I think that was 2009, wasn't it?
I think it was
2009 or 10.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to talk about Germany and England as far as bad decisions, but when you looked at it, you know, the United States is right up there, maybe even worse. I mean, you look at Matisse against Alexander in Judah.
Yeah.
Know, if that's,
agreed.
Oh, yeah.
If that's, yeah. So, I mean, if you're fighting an American fighter and you're not from here, you're going to have some serious problems, even if you're adopted. Like, Canelo.
Let's be honest.
Canelo's an adopted American.
America is not immune to hometown bad decisions.
Oh, speaking of bad decisions, man, Jason Sosa from my hometown, so I know how hard he had to work. I mean, I don't really know the kid, but I know how Camden, New Jersey is. The kid got a job. That's really on the short list of the worst decisions I've seen all year.
What a sour thing, you know?
I mean, I was stunned. Guys, he got knocked down, did Gamboa, and a point deduction. After that, I thought there's no way you could even give him a draw.
Even if you gave him five rounds, he still loses.
Right. You're just like, I just don't understand. But, you know, that's boxing. It's such a weird thing. And because there is all these little tiny universes within it, you're going to get this stuff, you know? I don't even know, though, if a national commission would help. Let me ask you this. You didn't say your name, but what do you think about the national commission? Or do you think it should be like a league, like the NFL or something?
No, man, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter as far as if you have three judges who are still getting treated. I mean, what are they going to do, stop the promoters from treating the judges? I mean, the judges get, you know, depending on who you're getting promoting to fight, the judge might get everything they want. So you can't really stop that, even with a commission. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I'm really getting sour about the sport. I mean, I used to watch a lot of fight tape and things of that nature, but I'm not wasting my time at this point. If it's close to me, I'll go watch it, and if it's right there on my TV, I'll watch it, but I'm not going on my way to watch any more fights, man.
Now, I know that you've called in the past and you've gone to fights. Like, you are a paying customer, which I certainly respect. What's the next fight you plan to go to live, in person?
Wow, I mean, thinking of it,
plenty of tickets available for Kota Ali.
Oh, come on.
Crickets.
Come on.
Crickets.
Come on. I mean, if I had a chance, if any of those cruiserweight fights were near me or any of those super middleweight fights were near me, I would definitely go. I might be out there in April. I'm not sure when the rounds are going to be, but maybe I would actually schedule my trip around the fight.
Okay.
But that's about it. So if I could do it, go over to UK or something. But that's about it. I mean, Crawford Horn, I'm not really happy about. And the thing is, you have to cut me off after this question, but I look at it, is Crawford ever going to get that career-defining fight like Triple G did? Because you got to look.
Well, again,
35.
This is a common theme. The other marquee 147-pounders are at the PBC. They play within their own sandbox. They don't seem to invite a lot of others in. That's just the reality.
Yeah, feel for the kids,
all right,
man.
Well, listen, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
347-215-7598. Hour one done here on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Okay, let's go to the fight review. Just one thing to really note here. FS1 last Tuesday, St. Petersburg, Florida. Devin Alexander with a 10-round decision over Walter Castillo. Gabe, you know what? I thought Devin looked pretty sharp. I liked what I saw.
Yeah. I think that was not what I expected. You know, when we said this, you know, he's still only 30 years old, so kind of closer to his prime than you know, leaving it. Had some time off, looks refreshed, and that's a serviceable, very experienced welterweight right there. That could be a problem for people if if everything's right, you know. And here's the thing, though: he can't wait 6 months to get another fight. He's got to get back in there within the next 3 months. Stay active, get something going. That's a talent-rich division where a fortune can be made.
Still had his legs, still looked very sharp. Listen, he's never been a power puncher, but very technically sound. Gabe, fight preview. On my way to Charlotte, I'm actually going to the ACC title game. Gabe, I am making a pit stop in Maryland/Washington, D.C. I'll be out there this Thursday for the Golden Boy on ESPN card. Lamont Roach taking on Ray Perez. Gabe, I think Lamont is a very sound, technically proficient fighter. I like him. The only thing he really doesn't have is power. But the bigger point is I'm glad that Golden Boy is allowing some of these guys on the East Coast that live in this region to not have to travel 3,000 miles to fight. I don't think it's fair to a lot of these fighters to not develop them at home, not fight them in their home region for years at a time, and then say, the problem is you don't sell tickets. Well, that's the chicken or the egg. And I'm glad Golden Boy is actually planting their flag in the D.C. area with these guys and saying, okay, see what type of business we have out here and try to develop it.
Well, I mean, they're maturing, man. You know, as a promoter, I mean, look at all they've expanded this year. They've even now got this radio show. I haven't listened to it, but, you know, Oscar was on there in their inaugural episode calling out Conor McGregor. Everybody went crazy about it. He's a hypocrite. Oh, my God, we're going to have a heart attack. Oscar, the promoter, is promoting on his new radio show. But, you know, they've expanded. And I think they've really learned from the Belasco shows, those Fight Night clubs that grew from the original ones they had. And now they're moving into a different region. It used to be, that when they were working with Top Rank, a complaint I would hear would be that Golden Boy wasn't really great logistically. They weren't all that organized. I bet nobody would say that about him now. I bet they're a much different machine.
I believe that they run a much tighter, more efficient company than they did. They have matured, there's no doubt. And Gabe, Friday night, and I believe this is on CBS Sports Network from Providence, Rhode Island, Real Deal Promotions is throwing a card for Toka Khan Clary in the main event, who's from this area, another African-American fighter who, you know, when he was with Top Rank, had to fight in, like, the Sportsman's Lodge. I want to give Real Deal Promotions credit. And I don't know who really runs the company. I think it's Eric Bentley, who used to be with DiBella and worked for the New York Commission. You know what? This is not just your run-of-the-mill shell company where a big name fronts it as the logo. They're actually doing work. They're putting on consistent shows. They're developing fighters. And they're letting fighters kind of develop a hometown following You know what, Gabe? Thumbs up to Real Deal Promotions. I like what they're doing.
Yeah, I read also that they're really investing in their fighters' future, making sure that all the guys get, like, you know, brain scans. That starts at the beginning of their career, you know, really getting them top-notch health care and making sure that a guy doesn't fight too long. It's too often, you know, people want to get in the promotion game for the wrong reason. I think Evander really loves fighting, the sport of boxing, and what it gave to him, and not just the money and the gigantic house, but, you know, the dignity and discipline, and really got to prove yourself and find out who you are. I'm really excited for him being in the sport. I was a huge Evander Holyfield fan growing up, and still am.
They seem to have a much more realistic business plan and expectation than Mike Tyson Promotions. And Tolga Khan Clary at one point was with Top Rank, took a real stunning first-round knockout. But again, first-round knockouts, you kind of have to throw them out, whether it happens to you or whether you dish them out, because those could be anomalies. Tolga Khan Clary is pretty skilled, and I've always said companies like this are needed because they will develop opponents and B-sides and serviceable guys. And certain promoters, they're not built to have 1,000 fighters. And in fact, sometimes I'd rather be the big fish in a small pond than a little guppy in this huge ecosystem where you're basically the eight-string guy. So I think Tolga Khan Clary is given the ability or the opportunity to actually develop a career. And you know what? This is how you do it as a company like this. You get up in the rankings, you become a mandatory contender, then you take your shot. That's the way it works. 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
All right. Let's go 347. You're live on the next round. 347.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Doing well. Thanks for being so patient. You've been on for like 59 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I'm usually on for that long anyway, so it's no big deal. But
right on.
So I was just kind of thinking about it. No, I kind of expected Kovalev to, like, come back the way he did. So one of my questions for you guys would be, like, in the whole history of boxing, when have there ever been, like, two matches between two fighters that have ended in controversy? And I don't mean three fights, like, with the Holyfield and Bo thing, but legit two fights that ended in controversy where everyone felt that one guy shouldn't. I felt Kovalev won the first fight. Okay, got it.
The whole series between Terry Norris and Louis Santana. Remember, Terry kept knocking him out but hitting him late, and Santana kept winning these really bad disqualifications. Remember that? Oh, that was terrible. Really held up Terry's career for about a year and a half, too.
You could argue maybe Morales-Barrera 1 and 2. The decisions could have gone the other way.
Yeah, but you know, Gabe, did they really hold up careers, though? I mean, because they ended
up,
they fought every other year in 2000, 2002, and 2004, and it didn't really seem to affect their place in the marketplace all that much.
No, that's all true.
All right, so I guess you guys got me on that one. So kind of to just jump back into the theme that you guys have been, you know, kind of saying all night with the 175-pounders.
Please do, yes.
It's a little bit upsetting that none of you guys and nobody that's came on has mentioned Badu Jack. I really feel like he's a major player. I think he's the best at 175, honestly. Maybe behind Kovalev. I'm not really sure, but I feel like he's really up there.
Well, I have mentioned Badu Jack as a possible opponent for Donna Stevenson, and he's with that side of the fence. I mean, he's with that Heyman Mayweather PBC universe, and there has been talk about Adonis Stevenson against Badu Jack. Well, let's hope we see it.
But then I would kind of lean
towards Jack in that fight, just for the record.
I was just going to say, so I really feel 100% that if you put Jack in there with either Bivol or Bita Bidev, I think both of you guys will favor the other guy instead of Jack. Am I right?
No, I think I'd pick Jack, as I just said. I'd probably lean towards Jack against Kovalev.
Nice.
I don't know. He's a little more fluid than Kovalev is, and I think that would serve him well. And too small of a sample size. I want to see him against, you know, like Jack has had some adversity. I haven't seen that with Bivol, so it's hard for me to pick with him, you know?
Nice, my man. So, all right, so that's great. So my last question for you guys would be, how do you guys feel about the whole Keith Thurman kind of openly, you know, blatantly saying that he's pretty much ducking Errol Spence, talking about he's not ready? Like, you have two titles. Like, what you talking about, you're not ready? That shit didn't make no sense to me.
Well, to me, you know, love is a many splendid thing. And, you know, Keith just got married. You know, he's not – maybe not even thinking like a fighter right now, it seems. Like, that, just that long rambling, you know, reasons for not taking the best available fight, that just says everything to me. The guy's still going to be on his honeymoon. I don't know, but speaking as – I've only been married 4 years, and I remember the afterglow it lasts, like, forever, you know. And so
yeah.
I think that's where he's at.
I know one thing. The honeymoon with the fans is over. When he did that interview last week, and I wasn't watching the show live. I always watch those shows on DVR. I was like, oh, Keith, sometimes you just have to lie.
Yeah.
I mean, just really lie through your teeth. You know,
jeez. Nah, that shit was crazy. But thank you guys for answering all my questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Gabe, before we move on here, did you hear about Adrian Broner got an arrest warrant for knocking out that guy in Las Vegas? It's on TMZ.
Shoving a lady and then world starring a guy. Yeah. You know, Adrian Broner's going to Adrian Broner. He's got a very long rap sheet, just keeps getting longer. There's video, you know, I remember when the video came out. You know, it just, what are you going to do? I hope he saved his money.
I heard
right
that
now,
that is not
bail.
The case, by the way. I heard that is not the case. So anyway.
About bail. 510.
About bankruptcy. Anyway.
Oof. 510. You're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. It's Fernando over in Richmond. How you guys doing?
Fernando,
what's
welcome
up,
aboard.
Well, good, man. I heard you guys talking about, you know, boxing becoming a league in the future, hopefully. But I'm not sure it's that big of a panacea, man. Like, you know, the NBA, you know, the NBA.
I don't want
a
league.
Referees go to prison.
Yeah. I don't want a league. I want boxing to be a natural business, which is organic, and it was that way for a very long time. Now, it has not been without its flaws, but I think when you organize, in essence, pseudo leagues where fighters can only fight a certain pool of talent on certain networks or platforms, that's more dangerous than anything else. But I'm certainly not for one that really wants a league for boxing.
Yeah, because if you look at the UFC, man, just a perfect example, they've exploited their fighters unbelievably, you know. They don't pay them. The owners become billionaires off of their hard work, you know. I don't want that for boxing, you know. I mean, I do want, you know, I want to be criticized and, you know, to be regulated, obviously, but at the same time, I don't think a league would be a panacea either, man. Like, so many people saying, like, I'm done with boxing because of crooked refereeing or judges. That goes on in every sport, man. NFL, NBA. NBA's had referees go to prison for fixing games, you know? So, I mean, it goes on in every sport, man. It's not that big of a deal, man. We should just enjoy the fights as they come, I think, you know?
You know what I would suggest? The only thing that I would say in terms of Commissioner Kim decrees, I would say that in the case where you have a network alliance, let's say one guy is with Showtime, the other guy is with HBO, I would say the networks then decide who bids higher will get the fight, just like Joshua Klitschko. And you work it out. One network gets the replay, the other network then gets the rematch. You work it out. But that's, to me, is the worst thing that happens in boxing, are network alliances that prevent certain matchups from happening. And I think it's much worse. They are much more damaging in reality than sanctioning bodies.
I agree with you, Steve. I definitely agree with you. You know, and one last question, like, who would you like to see Kovalev fight next? I haven't heard you guys really say anything. In my opinion, I would love to see Beterbiev. I know it's probably a pipe dream, but that's who I would love to see him fight.
Yeah, if it's not Adonis Stevenson, Gabe, and again, I'm a realist, so let's throw him out of there. I love the animosity and the personal history between those two, Beterbiev and Kovalev.
That's a brutal fight. Yeah, and he might be a different kind of boogeyman for Kovalev. I'd love to see that fight. I just think it's there's no way it ends in decision.
Anyway, Fernando, anything else?
Thank you. No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Unlisted number. You're live on the next one.
Oh, at work. Just listening, not work, guys.
Just listening. Okay, thank you.
No worries. Happy holidays. 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you doing? It's CT.
CT, welcome in.
Hey, I just want to talk about the fights that went over this past weekend. I'm a Gamboa fan, and I even thought he lost the fight. Like you guys said, with the knockdown and the point deduction, I don't see, especially how the how the flow of the fight was going towards Sosa. I thought Sosa should have won, but it's politics, and Gamboa got the win, and hopefully, like one of the callers said, he gets a fight with what's the Puerto Rican guy's name? That beat
Alberto
Carrados?
Mercado.
I would like to see that, but I think it might be interesting stylistic wise because they're both free swinging, you know. I like to see that fight.
That fight is guaranteed to end in a knockout, and those are the type of fights that I have no problems consummating.
And just the mindsets, the approaches to the fight, it's just guaranteed action, that fight.
Yeah, I agree. For the Barrera fight, I'm starting to like Barrera. You know, I know he gets knocked down in fights, but he kind of makes adjustments. I think the opponent that he had, like one of the callers said, it was just a little stylistically the way he was kind of
awkward.
Jumping. I never, yeah,
unorthodox.
Awkward. You know, he did that.
Unusual.
Yeah, he did this like this little jump he did in I think the 11th round. He did some type of weird jump in one of the rounds and then did his attack. But I think Barrera showed poise in the fight, and I would like to see him face Bivol next. Who's Bivol's biggest name on his resume? Is it Agnew?
It might be Ray Agnew, but it could be Valera. He beat Valera in his 7th pro fight. So, again, you're right. Right now, Bivol passes the eye test, but we do need to see more.
Yeah, I agree. I think I might lean towards Barrera in that fight.
That's why we'd like to see that fight then. Let's see what this kid has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right, CT, anything else?
Yeah, just with Kovalov, just it was one of those fights, those fights that he needed, and he showed that he can bounce back from adversity, losing his last fight. I think it's a big confidence booster for him, and I would like to see who he fights next as well. Any names that they mentioned?
Not that I know of. Again, Kathy Duva told me yesterday that Sullivan Barrera has his choice. Kovalev or Bivol, and I'm sure it'll come down to money. And I would think logic would dictate that a Kovalev fight, which, by the way, he could have had Kovalev this past weekend, but he turned down $400,000. So, keep that in mind.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call, guys.
CT, thank you very much. And, Gabe, I think the best way to describe the Valera fight for Sullivan Barrera is that old line from George Benton. Kid, son, look good tomorrow. Let's win tonight.
Seriously. It's a herky-jerky style. Like, what are you going to do? It's not going to be a highlight reel tonight. Just win. 714, you're live on the next round. 714?
Hello.
Crickets. All right, then. 510? This isn't Fernando, is it?
Yeah, Fernando, thank you.
Fernando, all right. Obviously still right, holding man. On, listening to us.
209, you're live on the next round.
Hello, guys. 209. How are you guys doing?
Trini!
Hello.
Talk to us.
What's up, man?
Not much, man. I just watched a fight this weekend. I guess Soto Carras passed to Gamboa now, the new gatekeeper. It was Sosa did it. He needed to do a little bit more to knock him out in order to win, but there was no way he won that fight. I don't know what the judges were watching. And but Kovalev, I've seen like two shots that Shabrisky did hurt him, a little pushed him back. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah, I think that was a jab in the first round that kind of knocked him off balance. Listen, Shabransky has power. That he listen, he's a heavy-handed guy. His Achilles heel doesn't catch well. Not a really good set of whiskers on him.
Yeah, that's the only problem with him. He don't have a set of whiskers. But it was good in March. He should be ready for March the 3rd and keep on going. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the card. So that other dude that fought Stellan Vieira, he was entertaining. He was kind of enjoyed that guy, the way
really?
He was going at. Well, it was just it was in a boring fight. He was just like kind of laughing and everything. He's like, what the heck is this guy doing? But but it was all right, So
I've seen him once on HBO, and that's enough for me.
Yeah, I never seen him. That was the first time. I don't want to see him again, but for what it was, for that card on Saturday, yeah, it was all right, But, I'm just waiting for Lomachenko and the Salido. Those are going to be good fights.
Oh, now, Trini, on that particular night, which show takes precedence for you, HBO or ESPN?
Both. I'll be watching both ESPN on the tablet, on my phone, and HBO on my TV. So,
okay, I just want you to know there's very little chance that the Heisman Trophy presentation will go into overtime or extra innings. So the ESPN card will start on time that night. I guarantee it.
Okay. Well, I'll be watching ESPN. I'm a huge fan of both, actually, Salido and Lomachenko. So I'll be, I'll be watching both fights at the same time. I'm going to try at least, which one will come better out of that was going to get my attention.
Yeah,
I
will be in Las Vegas at my favorite hotel, the Mandalay Bay. So that's where I'm going to be December 9th.
Yeah. Are you going to Salido?
Orale.
You be live
Viva.
At Salido?
Yes, absolutely.
Viva. Yeah, that's good.
It's going to be a fun
card. Yeah, I like Salido. Yeah,
you know,
it is.
Plus
it
Mandalay
is,
Bay. Mandalay Bay.
Yeah. Hey, well, have a good time over there, my man.
All right. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, guys.
Here's a tweet from Demolition Axe. Trusting the HBO process, but it's getting hard. Hopefully 2018 is a step up. And looking at the reaction of Twitter, that first show, January 27th, boy, I hope to God these two challengers exceed expectations. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, if you had to grade Peter Nelson's year, what grade would you give it on HBO?
Wow. See, here's the thing. I don't judge the pay-per-view fights. You can't give him credit for that. That doesn't come along with my subscription. And I do understand there's a lot of hurdles he has to overcome. PBC being an issue. Top Rank leaving the fold. But it's a lot closer to a D than an A. Wouldn't you say, Gabe, if you had to give him a grade?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe a C. We're starting to see, him losing some of the contracts. He does make action fights. He's always been an action fight guy. I think Angulo Kirkland was one of his first fights. I would say more like a C. I don't know if I'd go all the way with a D, but I do see a little bit of hope. We'll see, the next year.
Yeah, it's a process. It is a process. He's trying to rebuild the brand almost from the ground up.
Yeah.
So, listen, I need to realize this too. It's not an easy job. Everyone thinks they can be a GM of a baseball team because they play fantasy baseball. It doesn't work like that.
Well, and also, they've been in the shadow of this merger for a long time.
Yes, they have.
And
it's an issue.
It's not a time that you start spending a lot of money and building for the future. It's when you start
laying
people off.
You're not allowed to spend any money. You're not even allowed to spend money. Let's be honest about that.
Yeah. So, I think he's done something with what he's got. But next year, I think it feels like the changing of the guard is happening. And with what he's got at 75 and 60, I'm very excited for next year.
Gabe, couple of news and notes here. George Groves, Chris Eubank Jr., the semifinals of the World Boxing Super Series. Super Middleweight Tournament will be taking place February 17th, Manchester, England at the Manchester Arena. Gabe, that is a bona fide big event out there. That's a good-looking fight and event.
Yeah, no question. I was skeptical at first about this World Boxing Super Series, but they've done a hell of a job. They've moved it along much faster pace. It's not like the Super Six where you lose momentum and you forget about the fights. It's really good stuff, man. All the fights are just are top quality.
And Gabe, real sad news here. It was announced by Golden Boy over the Thanksgiving weekend that Cesar Diaz, young prospect, passed away in a one-car accident, I believe, on the 24th. Gabe, I remember calling his pro debut last summer alongside Beto Duran and thinking, this kid's got a future. And he was developing well, and now his life has been taken from him. All I can really say is my condolences, my thoughts and prayers to his friends and family. A real stunning loss here, real stunning news, in fact.
Yeah, that's really, really a shame around the holidays like that. It's just sad. I didn't know him. It's just the class after, I left the sport down there. But really just a shame. I saw the people talking about him on Twitter, and he just sounded like a really good person. So
yeah, he was. Yeah. Very solid individual. Also, something we discussed last week was made official by Golden Boy late last week. Spike O'Sullivan against Antoine Douglas will co-headline the Lemieux B.J. Saunders card on December 16th on HBO. And my understanding is that this could also turn into a triple header, as another fight could be added to the broadcast. Gabe, do we have any more calls on the line?
We've got an unlisted number. Let's see if they answer. You're live on the next round. Or not. Yeah, I think we've cleared the board. I don't know if the football has started, but... We have cleared the board.
Okay, well, I tell you what, it is what it is. We've gone 86 minutes. That's at least a 10-rounder plus half a round.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
looks
no
like,
problem.
You know, I got to tell you, it kind of says something that, and I'm going to be writing about this later this week for UCN Live, the Cotto farewell, it is kind of, this career is kind of ending with more of a whimper than a bang, don't you think?
Yeah, I would say so. People aren't that excited. I don't see you guys all, going crazy. Where are the, the Cotto heads? And even, there was a guy, actually, I just noticed this last week, somebody, or a few shows back, had sent me a DM asking, why is there no buzz around the Loma Rigo fight? And, you look at these two, maybe it's just the time of year. It's tough to sell a fight during the holidays. I don't know.
Well, that fight
sold
out, though, Gabe. Gabe, I really believe that if they could have used the big room and did the setup where they used the lower bowl, which I believe is between 8,000 to 9,000 tickets, Jim Boone believes that this has been the toughest ticket in the second half of the year, and they probably could have sold out the lower bowl. That fight, they're trying to do stuff. The thing is, let's just be very honest. The Cotto fight is a total disaster, according to Jim Boone, and you could just look it up online. And I believe there's a couple of things. Saddam Ali, let's put it this way. Like I said, this fight is more of a gold watch than a prize fight. Saddam Ali is not a bad fighter, but he's a fighter who in his biggest test was knocked out by Jesse Vargas at 47. Also, Puerto Rico's been through a lot. That island's been ravaged, and I think a lot of people still don't have power or electricity. Their lives have been really affected and will stay in that state for at least another 5, 6, 7 months, right? So they have other things on their mind. And maybe a lot of the Puerto Ricans that live in New York, instead of spending a couple hundred dollars on tickets, maybe have to send that money home. I mean, people have priorities. And then this, Gabe, it's the holiday season. It's kind of tough. It's not a big fight.
It's tough. Yeah. Everybody's traveling, and seeing their folks, and it's just a tough time. And especially for a gimme fight, if it was Miguel Cotto taking on a young lion at the end of his career, one last challenge, even if he's fighting like a Lemieux type, people would be there, I think. It would be maybe a different story, but I think those factors that you pointed out, it's a guy whose popularity was tied like the Puerto Rican Day Parade and to those New York Ricans, and, some of the island would come and travel for him, but that's all looking at a different way right now. So
yeah, and Gabe,
it is what it is.
Your thoughts on these reports of Floyd Mayweather's back training and working out, thinking about fighting again?
I mean, I think we knew that he was going to do that, but I mean, He's how many times has he retired? Maybe he's setting the record for that to add to his TBE resume.
Yeah, I don't know who he'd fight. I think, listen, whether we like it or not, I get fighting Conor McGregor. That was an easy score. That's an easy mark. I get it. Now, but after Andre Berto, which was the original retirement, then you have, hey, we're going to hustle this with Conor, completely understood. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Doesn't the next fight have to have some sort of legitimacy, like a Keith Thurman? Something of that ilk, or Errol Spence? Fat chance, you know?
It's got to. It's got to have, I mean, you know, who else would be there for him to fight? We've seen him fight an MMA guy, and Conor probably had as good a shot as any of the guys out there because he's, you know, a natural striker. That's, you know, but and the personality to match, all of it. It's, maybe they do a rematch? I don't know. There's nothing to believe.
Oh,
I saw a documentary about him recently, and as much as I really love the documentary and really, you know, like Conor McGregor, there's nothing about that fight that made me want to see a rematch.
Yeah.
Not a single thing.
All right, so Gabe, have we cleared the phone lines?
Yeah, we have. So,
all right, well, let's call it a day then, and I'll speak to you next week. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and David Duenas and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, this is Steve Kim saying, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.